Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Calvin Dunning. Calvin is the proud graduate of the University of Alabama, where he earned a degree in international finance with a concentration in Spanish and a minor in economics. Calvin moved to Nashville in 2013 and is currently Senior Vice President and Director of Community Development at First Bank. He previously worked exclusively in capital markets as pricing manager before pivoting to compliance and then community development in 2022. Community development allows Calvin to be a bridge from the bank to the community he cares about most by helping provide credit opportunities to millions of Nashville families throughout outreach and analytical research. Changing life is now both his professional and his personal purpose. Calvin was selected by the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation as one of Nashville's top 30 professionals under 30 in 2018. He was also selected to the 2019 class of Nashville Emerging Leaders, in the 73rd class of the Young Leaders Council, and the 5th class of Leadership Tennessee Next. Calvin now serves on the board for Siloam Health, Make-A-Wish Middle Tennessee, Operation Hope, and the advisory board for the Housing Fund. Calvin, with all your experience and wealth of knowledge, we're excited that you were able to make some time for us. Welcome to the show today.
Yeah, man, appreciate it. Thank you guys for reaching out. You know, definitely look forward to experiencing it. Appreciate you guys thinking of me. Awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, thank you. I always like to ask Calvin, just kind of get the conversation going. What is it that got you started in the financial sector to begin with?
That is a great question. Basically, when I first got out of school, it was kind of on the tail end of the huge housing crisis. So the job market was quite scarce. And, it wasn't really a place you wanted to be. And the first opportunity I got was actually at Wells Fargo. I was working on the HUD Rio no doc program in a call center. And did that for about 2 years, learned a lot. But then I went on to work and been an accountant for Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Did that for a year, and then I got the big call from Michael Mattee, who's now our CFO. He wanted to start a secondary trading floor, but he kind of wanted to do a little bit non-traditional. He went and got a whole bunch of guys that were like 25 and 26, and a whole bunch of experienced guys, and he was like, it's going to mold this thing into the way I want it. And he just threw us into the fire. He let us make our mistakes. And I ended up starting out as a lock desk analyst, worked my way up to capital markets analyst. We're working the trading floor. Good friend of mine, Drew Bunch, he was our head trader. We had Tyler Pate. He was running our servicing. I was doing all the pricing. And we were kind of the three amigos who were running the trading floor, all learning from the great sensei, Michael Mattee. And we worked that all the way up to pricing manager. And actually, one of the projects he had me doing was he had me doing an exclusive fair lending review. And at the time, we were a very small institution. So we were buying about a couple hundred million at a time. And when mortgage just exploded, and we went from 300 million to billions in a matter of 2 or 3 years. And a part of that.
Wow, that's incredibly rapid growth.
Yeah. And a part of that, of course, is now you have regulatory pressure. So that what comes with success is a little bit more eyes. So I was doing a little project where I was kind of just running all our loan data. At one point in time, we had about 42,000 LAR items. So our mortgage department was robust. And I was just doing a little project where I was kind of running all the pricing, strictly using Excel, just kind of winging it. And I guess I was doing a pretty good job because our compliance director came and see me one day on the floor. And she was like, what do you think about coming to work for the bank? At first, I was like, I don't know. I'm kind of enjoying myself doing this finance thing. But I realized it was kind of like a rare opportunity where I was able to kind of put my financial skills and my kind of gift for numbers with something I was already doing. I was already kind of super active in my community. I was volunteering a lot. And it was kind of an opportunity to get out and put it forth. Like I said, kind of put my passion with what I always do professionally anyway. And everything kind of took off. Because I feel like anytime you put passion into something, you have a different level of kind of engagement and you're kind of putting another level of effort into what you're doing. So it was a lot easier.
You love it, won't work a day in your life.
Exactly. It's a lot easier to get up when you know that that program or those that I was crunching is going to lead to maybe some guy getting in a house somewhere or a kid getting a service somewhere that, you know, would have been super beneficial and might change their lives. I might not see it, but at least I feel like I've done the thing. So basically, that's it.
So let me ask that. I mean, you're saying that your passion is what you're doing now because you're able to do a lot more community outreach and everything like that. Let's start at the very beginning of this. Mm-hmm. What is community? What is CRA? Like, let's start there.
So I think about 1977, before I was even thought about, they created a thing called the Community Reinvestment Act, and it was basically kind of making sure that banks kind of mediated a lot of the damage that was done in prior years with redlining and some of the other things. So they kind of put some requirements on some institutions to kind of put some investments there. So, you know, this one thing I've learned about housing is basically where you grow up is like a huge, huge factor in the trajectory of your life, you know, because your home price is tied to your property taxes are tied to your school, and the education you get is tied to where you go in life. And I was like, if there's an opportunity for me to possibly fix a neighborhood that might not have gotten that investment here, or might have not got that loan program where you can move here, and that kid might be able to move from a low mod to maybe a mod neighborhood, and that might be a world of difference for him. So if that opportunity was there, then I definitely wanted to be a part of that process. And I definitely think it's been super rewarding, super rewarding.
So what does Community Reinvestment Act, what does this require of banks? Like what is First Bank's obligation around this?
So we're required, when it comes to low mod neighborhoods, we have to make investments in there. We have to come up with creative lending patterns and ways to kind of get credit opportunities there. And we also have to provide services there. So it's pretty much all encompassing. It's basically kind of serving your whole neighborhood. Because a lot of times, like, I think we kind of get caught up on that high dollar neighborhood here in Green Hills or the Gulch. And sometimes we forget about 37208 where I live, or the Antiochs of the world, and kind of putting that in our forefront. Because I think all institutions want to do the right thing. It's just a lot of times our main focus is the bottom line. And the bottom line sometimes does not go through this report. Now, it doesn't go through a lower modern neighborhood. But kind of putting that in our peripheral, it definitely helps kind of focus. And then once we focus, I feel like we just have like a bunch of really talented people, and we can kind of make it happen. So
to translate a little bit of the lingo, you're saying low to mod. I'm assuming you mean low to moderate income, neighborhood. Perfect. Just making sure we get that.
I speak the language.
I mean, so many acronyms in the industry, right? Got to make sure that we translate every now and then.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so then, as a community reinvestment officer, how do you make sure the bank is fulfilling those purposes? Because, I mean, the CRA establishes, look, like, you have requirements to meet the needs of your low to mod income neighborhoods as well. As an officer, how do you help your bank achieve those purposes?
You know, first thing I think is like, the first thing is personnel. I definitely think we have an awesome group of people. And once you show them the direction, or you show them the problem, most times people will be willing to help. So the first thing I always do is I just want to address it. I just want to make you aware of what's going on. We might have high minority tracts. Like, we have 12 assessment areas, and we cover 3 states. A lot of these guys, some of these guys, they don't know what's going on in Memphis, Tennessee, or Collierville. But right. I'm the guy who takes a second look, and then I bring it to the attention of our executive. And usually, once I bring it to their attention, they're like, "Hey, let's go out and fix it." And then we figure it out. And, you know, I definitely think my experience kind of being a little bit more from a finance standpoint, I'm able to kind of communicate it a little better, because coming from capital markets, my mindset is, a lot of people, when they think about low mod lending, they just think about, oh, it's going to be a call center. It's going to be a call center. Right. Spending money. I look at it as a profit center. I'm like, we're going to get out here. We're going to create some creative products. We're going to do good loans. We're going to make some money. It might not be as much as the guys make over here, but we're just going to do good business, and we're gonna get in emerging markets, and we're gonna make sure we have staying power as an institution, because that's where the wave is going. You know, we're running out of people who've had homes for it. We're looking at new first time home buyers in this environment, for example. Refi market is dead. So if you're not out there going and trying to find that next level of people coming out of college and trying to help them get to that next level from a financial standpoint, you'll quickly find yourself pretty much dying as an institution. So I think it's pretty much just like awareness. Awareness is huge.
So how do you increase that awareness? Is it literally just like picking up the phone and saying, "Hey, we gotta do this," or do you have trainings? Like what do you do? How do you increase that?
Trainings. We also have an oversight committee. So we have an oversight committee. It's full of every single one of our executives on there. We have a representative from. And what do? Is compliance kind of puts together. They put together kind of a pamphlet. It's kind of let us know where we might have areas of concentration where we want to kind of take a second look. We'll sit on that phone and we'll strategize. You know, it might be talking to marketing, like, let's get this target market campaign going. We're going to go and hit these particular zip codes because we know that's where the customers that we want are. And they might not know about First Bank, but they will know soon. So, and then we might blitz them with our marketing, or it might be being creative from a product standpoint. We have a plethora of really creative products. Our CFO, he is awesome. And our chief risk officer, Ms. Amy Hamilton, like, we have 100% products on our portfolio. And in this environment, portfolio lending is not something that you see a lot of banks do. They want to hold off, especially with the deposits. It's a fight for deposits, but they're willing to take that extra step and say, "Hey, Calvin, of course, maybe we not want to give you this much portfolio space, but we'll definitely meet you halfway because this is something that's really important to us." So that may be creating a new product or working with credit or even working with some of our guys on a regional bank level and trying to kind of highlight some of the already doing. So
really what you're saying is you're part of the product conversations, you're part of the marketing conversations. Your job is to really make sure that as the bank is developing its attitude around CRA, that you are there present as part of those conversations, and that you are bringing the concerns of the low to moderate income neighborhoods forward into the bank's perspective. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely. I make sure they have a seat at the table, you know.
Definitely. Perfect. So then let me ask then, how do you determine where the banks, I'm not saying the bank is insufficient anywhere, but where maybe the bank can improve on specific areas? Like, what data are you looking at? What numbers are you crunching? Like, how are you making these determinations?
This thing has evolved a lot since we first started. Like I said, when we first started, it was just kind of me in an Excel sheet. I'm looking at raw data.
I love the self-made Excel sheet.
Yeah, I'm busting 4,000 loans of Excel data. I'm comparing loans locked on the same day. I'm just kind of just going about it. But I will say I've had the privilege of having a lot of people outside of our institution as well who definitely kind of helped me. For example, like Mr. Atkinson, he's a senior vice president at First Citizens in Durham, North Carolina. I emailed him out of the blue when I first got this job because I had no clue what I was doing. I was like, I know you don't know me. I've been assigned a task at my bank. And if you have 30 minutes of your time, I would love. He gave me an hour. Mr. Harry Allen here, Marshall at the Housing Fund. So basically, I just kind of lean on my resources. And then I go into the data. And the one thing is that men lie, women lie, numbers do not lie. So started out Excel, and then we grew the CMS. We started working with Fair Lending Wiz. We started working out with Radiant. We're doing regression. We're doing straight loan data. We're looking at steering. We're looking at our peers. We're just kind of making sure that we're in line or just outperforming everybody when it comes to that, because we always want to be kind of an industry high performer. We always want to be, that's what our CEO always preaches. We're going to be a top performer in everything that we do, no matter what, basically. So.
You know, I love the fact that you had the guts per se to just cold reach out to someone's like, "Hey, like, I got a question for you, and I'm really hoping you can answer this." That's great. I love that.
Right. And I like, so even to this day, I appreciate him so much because I'm sure that that message on LinkedIn was pretty odd to get a message from some random guy 600 miles away from you asking for some of your time or who might even be a competitor, and for you to take that time, like, I'll forever be indebted to those guys for kind of taking the time and deciding to pour into me even a little bit. So,
well, I mean, having that network and that place that you can turn to is such an important part of this job, just because, I mean, there's so many different elements of the banking industry that inevitably you're going to come across something that you just don't know. And it's important to be able to know how to find that answer and who you can turn to absolutely, to help you find out that answer and everything. So I love that. I think that's great.
And that's one of the beautiful things about CRA as well. I think it's more so of a community. I think it's more so like retail banking. It's like competitive. Mm-hmm. Everybody's competing. I will say CRA Fair Lending, it seems like everybody's like a little bit more open. Like, if I can't help you, I know somebody who will. It's super collaborative. We talk a lot. Like I said, how I met Mr. Allen was he asked me about CRA Wiz. He asked me to see what it is, and I knew the answer. And from there, I was like, well, I heard about you and I heard you're a really good banker. So I was like, do you mind talking to me for an hour?
He
was
like, I got sure. a question.
Yeah, sure. And we talked for like an hour in the middle of COVID. So I just been kind of blessed to kind of come across some really good people, basically. So who didn't mind, you know, giving me the next step up or trying to help me.
Give me the time.
Yep.
Yeah. So then let me ask then, you mentioned Fair Lending. How does Fair Lending play into the CRA scene?
The thing about Fair Lending and CRA is they're different, but it's really hard, but they're very, very similar, and it's so hard for people to separate them. A lot of times, a lot of these low mod tracks are high minority tracks, mm-hmm. and people get CRA assessment areas mixed up with REMA areas. So that first conversation is always about separating them and then kind of bringing them back together, per se, if that makes any sense. So,
Yeah. So then what is your role, as a director of community development for First Bank? If you come across something that raises a fair lending concern, because I mean, if you're finding insufficiency in the community, there's always the possibility of that raising a fair lending concern as well. Mm-hmm. How do you address that, or what approach do you take?
Usually, once we address it, first and foremost, I see if it's there visually. So if I think I see a problem, just looking at it from a loan standpoint, you look there, and that kind of gives you the trigger to look further. And that's when the data comes in. Mm-hmm. Like I said, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. So once we kind of drill down into some of these MSAs, and we'll go all the way down into a county specific. So I'm trying to get as close as possible to who the people I need to get to. So for example, our Tennessee non-MSA area, it covers different counties and they cross all over Tennessee. So it might not be Davidson County, or it might not be Knox. It might be Shelby. And being able to identify that it's Shelby and that's where I need to kind of concentrate the resources is kind of like the key. Because I think a lot of times people kind of get caught up in the macro level of kind of trying to figure out, and they don't kind of get granular and really try to find out where that pressure point is, where they can alleviate it, and then you kind of see a little bit more progress, basically. So then
let me ask, in your tenure as in community development and CRA, have you had any things that you're like, yeah, this program was really successful, like we saw a ton of kickback from this, or is there anything you'd be willing to share to the other banks that are like, you know what, I really loved how this worked out?
Yeah, I definitely think we had a First Bank Forward group where we just really prioritized recruitment, especially minority recruitment, as far as from a loan officer standpoint. That's the thing I can't think that gets kind of lost in the conversation. Much like every other group, people, mm-hmm. rich people, different people of different ethnicities, we all do our major business in our communities. Anytime you're spending over $25,000 on anything, you want to be very familiar with the person you're doing business with. So a lot of that business is done in your church, your community center. They're done with people you know, family members. So once we were able to kind of show the community that we were invested in bringing in the talent, I feel like it kind of opened up the spout. And then once we brought the talent in, they already had the connections. We didn't have to recreate the wheel. And then we kind of had to meet the talent somewhere with the products. So once we got them, we talked to them, like, hey, what do you guys need? And that's how we came up with our 100% program, which was completely awesome, because a big, huge obstacle with that minority low-mind lending is always just having down payment. So we were able to kind of establish our own DPA. We have our own self-funded DPA. All the money comes from First Bank, and we give it out to low mod, and it's tied to our Home Ready and Home Possible product, which are first-time home buyer products. We also have a shared equity program with Marshall Crawford there at the Housing Fund, where I don't know if you ever heard of the model. It's kind of like the land trust model, where basically what happens is the home is owned by three people. So with a mortgage is the Housing Fund, which is a nonprofit, they take 24%. We take one. No, the borrower takes one, and we take the additional, and we finance the additional.
Gotcha. Yeah.
By the nonprofit keeping 24 for us, it takes some of the risk off of us because we're not financing the loan at 100%. And by them keeping their 24%, they're able to kind of control the price. So anytime they sell that house within that 10-year period, maybe, they have a say in how much that house can be. And they're always going to keep it below market rent, especially somewhere like Nashville, where if I can buy a $300,000 house, I probably can sell it for $600,000 in 2 months. So with the Housing Fund 24% equity position, they say because we have this house and we gave you this house under these pretenses, we spoke to First Bank and they gave us $1 million donation, which was our biggest grant we ever gave. They want this house to stay affordable. So what we'll do is, when you get ready to sell this house, you're going to sell this house to somebody else in that same income bracket, no matter where you are in life at that time. So it's kind of like building on the building. So it's been awesome, man. I love it. Would love to expand it. And it's something we talked about, but like I said, it's all kind of going with the economy and trying to make sure that we're always doing stuff financially sound at the same time, because you always want to respect that rub.
So I love the fact that you mentioned that all of this started though with the recruitment inside of the bank. So I mean, you not necessarily changed the culture of the bank, because I'm sure the First Bank had a great culture to begin with, but you brought in the diversity, or you recruited those individuals into the bank that were able to be the talent that you needed to outreach to the community, to be involved in the communities, and to meet the needs of the community. So I think that is a fantastic place to start.
Absolutely.
So then as kind of a wrap-up question to all of this, I wanted to ask you if you could give one piece of advice to the listeners today. What piece of advice would you give them?
Oh, man, that's good. My number one advice I always give people is just to show up. I cannot explain how many opportunities come up for me just showing up to places that I'm not supposed to be. I've been to city council meetings. I've been to nonprofit meetings. I just go sit in the back, and you'll be surprised how many. They're so shocked to see a banker there. It's like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm a banker here. They were like, you guys never come here. And I've helped with the fund that houses everybody here, the Barnes Fund. I sit on the board for that and help them kind of decide the next round. It's all just kind of learning. It's kind of not being able to collaborate with one another. So if I had any advice to anybody, don't be afraid. Mr. Lobert, he's our consultant out in Arizona. He has a saying. He's like, you shouldn't ever try to do business somewhere where you're scared to go to the neighborhood. He's like, if you're scared to go and you're scared to mingle with the people, you should not do business there. That's the first step, because banking is a relationship, and it goes both ways. And you have to pour into one another and build that rapport, because there's a certain level of trust that comes there when you're kind of asking people to put their financial future in your hands, basically. So.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, so many of our guests have said relationship, but I love the perspective that you took, is just to show up and like be present in the community and everything like that, because that absolutely is huge in just getting not only your name out there, because I mean, if you're looking at generating sales, that's a great way to do it, but also the name of the institution that you work for and that you're involved in the community. So I absolutely love that. Well, Calvin, thank you very much for joining us for today's episode.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. I enjoy it. You know, I always like to talk, so, you know, I appreciate you giving me that opportunity earlier today. So.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.